Class is now in session. And the UPS Store is here to help you ace arriving on campus. Our certified packing experts can pack everything you need, from desktops to decor. Plus, when you pack and ship with us, you get our exclusive pack and ship guarantee. Your items arrive safe or your money back. Restrictions and limitations apply. To get a 20% off packing coupon and for full details, visit theupsstore.com/packing.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help. You save.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We saw a lot of push on first responders in the trial of Karen Reed in the last week or two from Alan Jackson, and we've heard some really interesting testimony as well. Let's take a look at Kate McLaughlin. She's a paramedic firefighter, first responder, who is another individual who, for no reason, doesn't even seem like she wants to be here in court, and I don't blame her one bit, also heard Karen Reed say, "I hit him." Let's take a look at how that played out.
Once we had come to a stop, I asked if there had been any significant trauma that happened that preceded this. And she answered with a series of statements that she repeated. "I hit him. I hit him." There was a woman next to us who told her to calm down, stop talking, calm down, you're hysterical. So she repeated, "I hit him." And a police officer asked her, said, "You what?" And she repeated it again, "I hit him." And the officer then signaled for his sergeant to come down to the scene or down to where he was.
When she first told you that she had hit him, you said there was another woman next to her. Did you know who that woman was?
Not at the time.
Do you now know who that woman was?
I do.
And who was that?
Miss Jen McCabe.
Did you know Miss McCabe at that time?
No.
Do you know her personally now?
No.
Are you friendly or friends with her in any way?
No.
You mentioned that when the defendant said, "I hit him, I hit him." Ms. McCabe was trying to intervene?
Yes, it appeared that way.
What did it appear she was trying to do?
Trying to get her to calm down, to stop talking. It appeared that she was...
Sustained. There was disregard that comment.
Did Ms. McCabe interject verbally?
Yes.
After Ms. McCabe interjected and the defendant made those statements about hitting him, did you persist in getting more information, asking to clarify what she meant by "I hit him"?
No, I did not.
Why not?
A few reasons. I felt at that point, given the situation and how disturbing, and it was a very emotional situation, the woman was very upset.
Now, some people are interpreting that as part of a conspiracy, that this woman, oh, she's hesitating. She's human. This was extremely natural testimony. I mean, what did you glean out of that? How do you think the jurors took that in?
I think the takeaways from that testimony are that it wasn't just one person who heard Karen Reed say, I hit him. It's multiple people who at the time had no relationship with one another, had no chance to kind of get their stories straight, had no motivation to, you know, mutually fabricate something against a person. This is just the perceptions and observations they made at the scene at that time. And that comes off as super credible. They didn't have any time to engage in some sort of spun up conspiracy like defense is arguing.
Now, let me ask you as a defense attorney, when you have a witness like this that's saying some pretty damning things in court, and obviously she got a chance to repeat it quite a bit when the prosecution was up there, and then you go to cross. Is it ever a good idea to try and get the witness to keep repeating the same damning words over and over and over?
You want to avoid that like the plague. That is one of the worst pieces of evidence for the defense. The last thing you want to do is have that witness repeat and emphasize and state again to this jury, Karen Reed, your client saying, I hit him.
Is it ever a good idea as a defense attorney of, let's say, Karen Reed, to flat out say, well, that's a confession, isn't it? in any way, shape, or form, when crossing the witness who is saying, I heard her say, I hit him.
If you're the prosecutor, you want to say that, but certainly not. You don't want to emphasize and affirm for this jury that some statement was in fact a confession on behalf of your client to some death crime.
Oh, you mean kind of like this?
I hit him. It's my fault. I did it. That's a confession, correct?
She said, I hit him.
And Officer Seraph just stands there, and my client walks away, correct?
You'd have to talk to Officer Seraph about that.
Oh, we have.
You should.
Mrs. McLaughlin,
objection.
Okay, so,
and according to you, you're writing on your glove.
Yes.
Okay, what kind of glove?
Just a regular latex glove that we use on the ambulance.
You didn't have a notepad?
I probably did. Sometimes it's easier to just write it down on your glove.
Right. Did you write, I hit him on your...
No, I did not.
Because she's a first responder. She's a paramedic. She's there to try and save a life. She's not a criminal investigator, which not hard to understand, I think, to most, but I guess it eludes Alan Jackson a little bit. Again, not his best work.
Not the right approach there. And Alan Jackson is a very seasoned and savvy trial attorney. You know, but sometimes you make a misstep in there. And I think he really stepped in it during that cross-examination.
I think that's putting it lightly. Here's a little bit more that we're going to take a look out of them on cross. And this is Jackson trying to tie a relationship together with the first responder because she was in the same grade or high school with one of the Elbert's children. And somehow that means it's a mass conspiracy.
The reality is, Ms. McLaughlin, your relationship with Caitlin Albert is far more than simply somebody that you went to high school with. Isn't that true?
I described what it is.
Do you stand by your testimony that Caitlin Albert is, quote, somebody I went to high school, I went to high school with somebody by that name?
I said that, and I described the relationship numerous times throughout that testimony to clarify it.
And you clarified it under questioning by me, correct?
Yes. And Mr. Lally, he asked follow-ups.
And in fact, you were shown some of these photographs last year, too.
Objection.
Sustained.
The reason you clarified it is because you were confronted with photos of yourself last year, correct?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. The reason you clarified it, as you just testified, your relationship, is because you were confronted with photographs of you and Caitlin Albert last year, correct?
I just answered the questions that you had.
Right. And you were shown photographs last year.
I was, yes.
There's also another member of the Albert family that you've spoken to about this case, isn't that right?
No.
January 30th, 2022, you were contacted by a member of the Canton Police Department to set up an interview for you.
No, I was not.
You remember being contacted by anybody to set up an interview with Michael Proctor?
The state police called me and I met with two state troopers.
Did he not do his homework, or is this just completely, is he riffing at this point? Is this all off the cuff, or was it, or did he sit there the night before? Because I'm hoping it's all off the cuff and it's just, shit, I got to spitball this and it's just a bad day and things aren't landing. I'm hoping he didn't like sit here the night before and plan these questions out and go, this is a gotcha moment, and really, really miscalculated it.
You know, sometimes you're in the moment and yeah. You think you're going in the right direction and you're kind of improvising and it can completely blow up in your face. So you gotta sure. Be careful about that. And you don't want to stick completely to a script, but as you go off and as you riff, you got to make sure you're not doing more harm to your case. And that was kind of a meandering, ineffective interaction there.
Yeah, I'm just like, what is going on here? What I don't know. I mean, Karen Reed put these guys in such a corner from where they signed up for. I mean, the evidence that exists now didn't exist when they signed up for the case, because she created it in all of these interviews, which are now coming back to bite her. And we're going to take a look at some of that now, because it just keeps coming out. And I guess Karen thought that the only time the cameras were rolling was when they were actually using usable footage, which you don't know when you're doing a documentary. They're just going to pick stuff. You have to assume everything that's being said is on camera and can come back at you. I guess that eluded her. Or she didn't care, and she just thought her words are magic, and anything she says is just going to be great, even though it contradicts, like, reality and her own statements.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.